Live from Lee's Summit, Missouri, in the 8th State Senate District, three candidates shared their competing visions on business and taxes, healthcare and abortion, marijuana and guns. It's a special edition of Statehouse Blend, Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. There are only a few legislative races this November, just those where a vacancy needs to be filled, but one of the most dynamic and expensive is taking place in eastern Jackson County. Majority floor leader of the Missouri House, Mike Searpoy, was considered a likely choice to succeed fellow Republican Senator Will Krause, who resigned to take a state job. Democrats recruited a strong challenger in Hillary Shields, a co-founder of the Indivisible KC political organizing group. The race really got interesting when Jacob Turk, the perennial Republican challenger in Emanuel Cleaver's last six elections to Congress, collected enough signatures to get on the state Senate ballot as an independent. So on October 25th, just under 3 weeks before Election Day, I had the privilege of moderating a candidate forum co-sponsored by KCUR and the local League of Women Voters chapter and conducted under rules developed by the League. Opening statements, the same questions of all candidates with answers given in a predetermined rotating order, closing statements at the end. More than 200 people gathered in a meeting room at John Knox Village, a retirement community in Lee's Summit, for a wide-ranging and illuminating conversation. Here it is. Thank you very much. Good evening, and welcome all of you to this candidate forum for State Senate District 8. It really is a privilege and a pleasure for KCUR to be co-sponsoring tonight's forum with the League of Women Voters. And thanks to all of you for your presence here tonight. What an incredible thing it is. We had 100 chairs set up. That's all the chairs they have here at John Knox Village. As you can see, we are not only standing room only, we may have as many people standing as we have sitting. So what that tells me is how important this election is. I think that's partly because it's a special election in an off year, so it has all of our attention. It's the only show in town, but I think there's more than that. These are turbulent political times in Missouri and in the nation, and for many, this election stands as a snapshot, a temperature check on what issues stand out to voters and just what those voters think their leaders should be saying and doing about them. So without further ado, let's meet the three candidates seeking to serve as senator from the 8th Senate District. They each have 90 seconds to make an opening statement. We did that drawing for them before they got here. We had witnesses. It was fair. And we drew those names, and they came out in the order left to right that you see them here tonight. So we'll introduce them as they make their opening statement. And I invite you to applaud only once tonight as each candidate is introduced. Let me first introduce the Republican candidate, Representative Mike Searpoy.
Should I start? Okay. Thank you, Brian. Whoever says people aren't interested in politics don't know what they're talking about. This is a great crowd tonight. Thanks for coming out. This is really impressive, and I'm glad people are interested in this race. This is an important race. My name is Mike Searpoy. I hope by now people are starting to understand how to say that. It's been on the TV quite a lot, and I think people are starting to wrestle that one to the ground. I am in the House right now. I'm in my fourth term in the Missouri House. I'm currently the floor leader. I'm from Kansas City. I grew up in Kansas City, spent my whole life here. My wife and I, we've been married 45 years. We moved to Eastern Jackson County in 1975 and been out here since. We've called this home for a long time, raised our kids out here, and really enjoy the quality of life in Eastern Jackson County. One of my goals since I've been in Jeff City is to keep what we have out here going strong. We are blessed with good cities, good schools, and good families. And one of the things I try to do is make sure that is maintained by improving the economic development, economic climate in Missouri to make us more competitive with other states. And if all we were competing with was Illinois, we would have a much easier time. But we have neighboring states that are doing quite well. And we've tried to do things that make us as competitive as they are to attract businesses. Because a lot of the problems we have in this state right now in St. Louis and other places is related to jobs. A good job cures many of those failings. And that's what I've been trying to focus on in Jeff City, is to do things that will help us improve that climate. Thank you.
Our second candidate is the Democratic candidate, Hillary Shields.
Okay. Thank you. I want to start by thanking the League of Women Voters and KCUR for hosting this forum. I'm so glad that the voters of the 8th District get the chance to see contrasting visions for the future of our state and to make an informed decision. My name is Hillary Shields. I grew up in rural Missouri and live here in Lee Summit with my husband Mitch and our dog Bowser. I am a paralegal. I'm an introvert. I like to make quilts and do jigsaw puzzles and host foreign exchange students, and I never thought that I would get into politics. A year ago, I could not have imagined this. But after the last election, I felt like I had to get more involved. So I started organizing regular people to go and talk to their elected officials about things like healthcare and education, issues that were important to our communities. And way too often, it felt like the people that were supposed to be representing us in Washington and Jefferson City weren't listening to us. They were only listening to their big donors. And I felt like we needed someone in Jefferson City to be a voice for regular people, for parents who are worried about being able to afford to send their kids to college, for seniors that are trying to decide whether they're going to pay their light bill or pay for their prescription medications, and for working families that just want a seat at the table. So I apologize in advance. I'm probably not going to be as polished as these guys. I'm not a professional politician, and I think they've run for office 10 times between them, so I'm kind of new at this. But I really look forward to being a part of this discussion and to earning your vote. Thank you so much.
Our third candidate is the independent candidate in this race, Jacob Turk.
Thank you all for coming out tonight. I also thank the League of Women Voters and KCUR for putting this on. My name is Jacob Turk. I'm a man with conservative values who's an independent thinker. I am a Republican. I'm a Marine veteran from the Vietnam War era, a happy husband, proud grandfather, and I owned my own business for 12 years. It was a software business, and now I have a one-man engineering and education consulting firm. Don and I have attended Lee Summit Community Church since 2005. My faith is of primary importance to me. I seek to walk in integrity and in honor every day. To make ends meet during this particular political season, I am working part-time at a security job. My priorities are simple: listen to you. We have a lot of issues that we'll be handling, and my duty is to represent you well, and that takes hearing your voice so I can carry it with me. As a Marine veteran, I'll be a go-to advocate for our active duty military and for our veterans and for their families. And as a small business owner, I'll be a voice for our job creators, the mom and pop businesses that create the jobs in this entire country as well as in Missouri. My name is Jacob Turk. I look forward to your questions.
The first question, we'll consider that the first time through the rotation. So our next question will go to Ms. Shields first, and then to the other candidates in sequence. In this year's legislative session, Missouri lawmakers adopted a number of laws that supporters called pro-business. These included Senate Bill 43, which made it more difficult to prove employment or housing discrimination, and the right to work legislation, which banned agreements that require workers to join a union or pay union dues. My question is, do you think Missouri is headed in the right direction with laws like these? And what sort of legislation in this area would you support to promote the state's economy? Begin with Ms. Shields.
Thank you. So-called right to work is wrong for Missouri. Let's start right there. I've spent a lot of time talking to our working families here in the district, and they deserve a seat at the table. They deserve a chance to be heard when it comes to negotiations with their employers. Our unions are the backbone of the middle class. They've brought us weekends, they've brought us safe working conditions, they've brought the end of child labor, and we need to support them. That's why I collected signatures to repeal right to work and why I want to go to Jefferson City and block harmful legislation that hurts our working families from being passed again. So I think that Missouri is going in the wrong direction on this. What I think that we do need to do to support our businesses is do things like invest in education and infrastructure. What really makes for a successful business community is having an educated workforce and having roads and bridges that are not crumbling. And that's getting harder and harder given that we've gone and cut our higher education budget across the board. And I'm time is up.
Mr. Searpoy, Representative Searpoy is next in this, according to my grid.
I'll talk about right to work first. Yes, we passed it this year. It'll be on the ballot next year. It'll be decided then. I support right to work. A lot of people say it's attacking unions. It does not. The two states that had the most union growth the last couple of years have been Indiana and Oklahoma, and they both are right to work states. All it says is that you have to earn your union workers. You have to earn them. They don't have to join you. I was a union when I worked for the Southwestern Bell for 38 years. 12 of those years I was in craft, and I was a union member. I thought my union did a good job for me. I would have gladly paid the union dues that they needed. We have two great examples right here in this area. The Ford Clay Como plant is in Missouri where there's no right to work, and Kansas, a GM plant is over on the Kansas side. I've been told their union membership is nearly the same because the union members there like the union. They think they bring good value for their dollar, and so I support the idea of letting people make that decision. Furthermore, when companies are looking to locate someplace, there's a list of questions they ask. Being a right to work doesn't mean they'll come, but it means they'll go further on the list because that's one of the things they look for. Thank you.
And Mr. Turk.
Thank you. I support right to work because I think it strengthens both business owners and unions. That many of the rank and file union members that have supported me in my congressional campaigns have wanted a more responsive union leadership, and they feel they can get it that way. So I think it's a place where unions can compete for workers, and business owners can work in partnership with them if they wish. For me, you don't have to pass legislation to create a good environment for businesses. We have struggles with the bureaucracy. I've talked to 1,600 small business owners over the last couple of years, and one of the problems they have is with Department of Revenue attaching their funds before things are adjudicated. Department of Natural Resources has been difficult to work with for farmers. So I can intervene on their behalf with the bureaucracy. Thank you.
Next question will go first to you, Mr. Turk. Yesterday, new abortion restrictions took effect in Missouri. These were the result of the General Assembly's passage in a special session this past summer of a law that required, among other things, the same doctor who will be performing an abortion to counsel the patient at least 3 days before the procedure. My question is, do you think Missouri's abortion laws are sufficient and appropriate as they now exist? Should they be more or less restrictive? Mr. Turk.
I'm pro-life from conception to natural last breath that we draw. And I think the legislation is moving in the right direction. We have an abortion industry that is well over $1 billion a year, and there needs to be consumer protection for women when it comes to that. And actually, the way that abortion will end is there are so many pro-life people that come alongside those women when they come in crisis, and even when they have an abortion, that will come alongside them after that abortion to help them because they care. They care about the babies, they care about the mothers, they care about the elderly, and that's where I put my focus, is working at the grassroots level for the pro-life cause. Legislation helps, changing hearts helps more.
All right, Ms. Shields.
So abortion isn't a choice that I think I'd ever make for myself, and I don't think anyone is pro-abortion, but I don't think that this is a choice that our government should be making for us. I also think that the special session that was called is a giant waste of resources. It costs $20,000 a day to put our legislature in special session. Those are resources that should be going to our communities to make them more family friendly. What I think the government's role is to create a world where anyone who's facing an unplanned pregnancy has a great job, quality public schools, and affordable health care, so that if they want to have that child, they absolutely have that opportunity. And I think that when we take our scarce resources and spend them on $20,000 a day special sessions, that is diverting them from our communities that really need them. And I think that's a lack of leadership in Jefferson City that led to that point. If they wanted to pass these laws, they could have done it during regular session. There is no reason to waste your tax dollars sending them back to Jefferson City for extra time.
Representative Searpoy.
Thank you. I, too, am pro-life, and the reason we had a special session was because St. Louis had passed some city regulations making it what we called a sanctuary city for abortion services. It was too late in session to deal with it then. That's why we dealt with it in special session. I was really proud of that bill. The bill that initially was a Senate bill that the Senate passed out was far too weak. I talked to the Speaker, Todd, and we decided to make it much stronger and closer alignment with the governor's call for the special session. And the committee did great work and passed a very strong bill. I think the strongest bill in the country on that issue, and I support it strongly.
This next question will go first to Representative Searpoy. One of the critical issues facing Missouri and the rest of the country is health care. Congress, for now at least, has not repealed or replaced the Affordable Care Act, and it continues to be up to individual states to determine whether to expand Medicaid coverage in their states and avail themselves of federal funds. Missouri is one of 19 states that has not expanded Medicaid. Should it? Why or why not?
No, we shouldn't. We have not. We've resisted that. Actually, we have a lot of areas where doctors will not take new Medicaid patients. The reimbursement rates are so low. Giving more people bad insurance is not compassion. What we need to do, I'm hoping the federal government, I've been saying this for several years now because Washington is so dysfunctional, I'm hoping they will address health care in general and give and maybe block grant the Medicaid to us. I think we're smart enough to figure out how to spend that money. We have got a finite number of dollars to spend in this state for public education and other things. The biggest threat we have to K-12 education funding, we have finally got the formula funded 100% this year. The biggest threat it has is the Medicaid growth, just the generic growth in what we have now. It is growing 60 to 80 to 90 to $110 million a year. And every dollar it takes away is a dollar we cannot use in public education. Medicaid and K-12 education are the two biggest pots that our money goes into. And they're in direct competition. So as one gets bigger, the other one must get smaller.
Mr. Turk.
Is that what the grid
says?
Yes,
the grid's
talking to you.
I just do what it tells me.
Oh, okay. That is really an open question. Medicaid expansion can eat up our entire budget. And what we need to do is to be more thoughtful about actual health care for the beneficiaries that are currently on Medicaid, see if there's another system that we can put that money towards that gives people choice and moves them more towards being able to use the same private providers that everybody else gets to use that has good insurance. I've always favored a system where we have a sliding scale where people that need help with insurance premiums can get it. Those who don't, they wouldn't get that help. And then everybody can go out into the same marketplace and buy the good insurance that providers will take. And then we wouldn't have this shrinking pool of Medicaid providers because many do refuse that. So let's give everybody access to excellent health care instead of kind of health care.
Ms. Shields.
Yes, we need to expand Medicaid. It's really simple. Our tax dollars are going to Kentucky and Ohio and California and other states that have expanded their Medicaid programs, and they are not coming back here. And when my opponents say that it's going to cost us more money, that's ridiculous. The federal government pays for the expansion. It is our tax dollars that we are not taking advantage of. But this is really a moral issue. My mom, who's here tonight, is a licensed clinical social worker. She does community mental health in rural Missouri. And she has clients who want to get counseling, who want to get help for drug and alcohol addiction, including opioid addiction, who are not able to because we haven't expanded our Medicaid program. There are people suffering in our state every day because politicians in Jefferson City are playing politics with their health and their lives. And we have got to stop. We have got to bring this money back for our rural hospitals. We've got to bring it back for the health care providers that would be employed when we bring these tax dollars back to Missouri. Thank you.
This question will go first to Ms. Shields. The Missouri General Assembly is a place that by most accounts has seen an increasing degree of division over the last several terms, with little accomplished on a bipartisan basis. Even the Senate, of which you all hope to become a member, is said to have become a place where comity and cooperation have been replaced by partisanship. How would you describe your own relationship with your political party and with partisanship? And how much will your agenda in Jefferson City be determined by the political party label that you have worn? Ms. Shields.
Thank you. So for me, being in Jefferson City, my first priority is going to be to serve the people in my community. it's not about being a Democrat or Republican. It's about what's going to help working families. And I believe that we can find common ground on a lot of these issues. One thing that was an inspiration this year was when Republicans and Democrats came together to find a bipartisan solution to fund in-home health services for low-income seniors and disabled Missourians. It was really sad that the governor vetoed that bill, and it was even sadder that Republicans failed to show the leadership to stand up to him and overturn that veto. I do believe, though, that we can come together in the next session and find a bipartisan solution to make sure that our seniors have in-home care and that they can afford their prescription drugs and try and make policies that work for our working families. And that's always going to be my priority. It's not about whether you have a D or an R or an I after your name. It's about what you're doing to make life better for families.
Representative Searpoy.
The partisanship. I think Jeff City, I was surprised when I got there because I was in 10 when I got elected. I was watching the news like everybody does and went to Jeff City and thought Washington and Jeff City were kind of the same. And honestly, Brian, there are some issues down there, but it is much more civil. There are some natural differences. Our party platforms, our worldviews are dramatically different in some areas. But there's a lot of areas we have bipartisanship. Most of the budget bills passed with Democratic support. And so there's natural differences. I think that's what the parties are for. I'm a Republican because I align with a lot of their views. I'm not a Republican because I like the country club. And I'm a conservative. I think government should be as small as possible. The tax burden should be as low as possible. I always realize when we're spending tax dollars, we're actually spending hard-earned money from somebody, and we need to be very careful with that. It's a responsibility that I take very seriously. I found down in Jeff City listening to people, it's very, very easy to spend other people's money. And I think we need to be very careful doing that.
Mr. Turk.
Thank you. I'm not surprised that the one thing that establishment Republicans and Democrats could agree on was spending our money and spending a lot of our money. I'm a reasonable man. I am a man of deep conservative values who is an independent thinker. And in my runs against Cleaver, I realized that I had to reach out to everybody. So my coalition includes Democrats and independents and Republicans who believe that I would be a better choice to represent them than Cleaver was. And that's what I'm working for now, is I'm working for the people before a party, before a special interest. We take no special interest money. Our campaigns have always been grassroots, and we're all about people and listening to people and representing their voice to Jefferson City instead of what we so often get is Jefferson City's voice pressed down on us. So I'm about serving you, and I'm about serving the people that you love and care for.
Thank you. Next question, we'll go first to Mr. Turk. We've had a number of questions about transportation, which is a perennial issue in Missouri politics. The contours of the discussion are often the same. The expenses necessary to maintain and improve state roads and bridges are rising. The options for providing adequate funding are decreasing. What would you do about Missouri's highway system? Do you support raising taxes to fix Missouri's roads and bridges? Be as specific as you can. Mr. Turk.
The political class made a error in judgment a few years ago when they tried to put a sales tax on. And I knew from talking to hundreds of people that that was an issue to them, though it wasn't at the federal level. They talked to me about it anyway. What Missourians understand is they would like to pay as they go, which means a gasoline tax. They understand there are less gallons used. They want good roads. They want safe roads. And so the people have led the way, and they would bless an increase in gasoline tax if the government would only spend it on their roads and bridges and not do what happened with the casino money that was supposed to go to education. Folks don't trust the government to do what they say they're going to do, so there would have to be a lockbox on this gasoline tax to make sure that it's spent to fix our roads and bridges.
Ms. Shields.
So we absolutely need to invest in our infrastructure. Having functional, safe roads and bridges are the most basic of responsibilities of our state government. And the fact that MoDOT has been chronically underfunded is the result of irresponsible leaders in Jefferson City who haven't been willing to step up to this challenge. We have got to find a way to fund this infrastructure, because if we don't, it's going to hurt all of us long term. It's not just that your car is going to get damaged when you hit a big pothole. It's that businesses aren't going to come to our state because they don't want to be in an environment that doesn't have a functioning infrastructure. So I look forward to the results of the bipartisan committee that's working right now to find a solution to this and to seeing what their recommendations are. But the thing is, I feel like if you send these guys to Jefferson City, you're going to get more of the same. Republican leadership has failed on this issue for years, and I don't see them fixing it anytime soon. We need some new voices in Jefferson City.
Representative Searpoy.
I hear a lot that the Missouri roads are crumbling, but I drive all over the state, and I find that they're in pretty good shape. That's one of the things I think MoDOT's problem is, that they take good care of our roads. I-70 is overcrowded. It needs another lane. But structurally, and I know the road bed is in bad shape, but they do a good job of maintaining it. The thing we have in Missouri, you have to remember, is the Hancock Amendment. And when numbers with MoDOT are very large, and so the Hancock Amendment would be triggered, which means it's going to go on the ballot, so people have a voice in that. And I don't think the Missourians are convinced yet that there is a big problem. We have enough money with new car sales and gasoline sales now to pull down the federal money that's out there. And so that crisis was resolved. Going forward, eventually we're probably going to have to look at something, but I don't think we're there yet.
This next question will go first to Representative Searpoy, and it actually picks up on something that you just mentioned. The Hancock Amendment limits the ability of state government to increase taxes without voter approval. Many have wondered if state revenues are sufficient to meet state needs. There have been significant cuts to higher education and some other areas of education and social services in recent years. One of the questioners on a card notes that Kansas ran into a number of problems after their attempt to cut taxes. What is your position on Missouri taxes? Is it possible or necessary to increase revenue? Do they need to be cut further? Representative Searpoy.
We passed a bill a few years ago that has a phased-in income tax reduction, the first income tax reduction we've had in 100 years. Over a period of time and with revenue growth, it'll reduce it from 6 to 5%. Not much, but it's an improvement. I'm of the opinion. I always hear about government not having enough money. I'm more concerned about our citizens and our families who struggle and have to pay the taxes that run us. We have about a $26 billion budget in this state. Two-thirds of that comes to the federal government. We spend a lot of money. I think I would not support a tax increase. I think our citizens are burdened with enough taxes. We have to figure out a way to divide that money. Every year through the budget process, especially right now we're struggling like we are, the economy is not growing quite as much as we'd like to see. I think it is improving. The numbers are not as bad as we once feared right now. They're not as good as we hoped, but they're improving. And I'm hoping next year we can restore some of these things. But no, I would not support a tax increase. And I think we have to deal with what we have.
Mr. Turk.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Grid. I don't think the problem has ever been in any level of government that there's not enough revenue. When you give establishment politicians the checkbook, the bills always get bigger and bigger and bigger, because no matter what they say, they are spending other people's money. And that is a sacred duty to make sure that every dollar goes to where it should go and not to things that the citizens don't want. And it's important to look at how it is for our working men and women, for our families, that we have too many legislators that give away tax breaks to big interests. I'm not in favor of that. I am an independent voice. I've never been in Jeff City. And actually, I haven't been in elective office. And through all those times and those tens of thousands of conversations, I've never had one person say to me, hey, raise my taxes. What they have said is, hey, watch my money.
Ms. Shields.
When our seniors can't afford to pay for their prescriptions because we cut the Missouri RX program, when senior and disabled Missourians are losing access to in-home health care, when our public universities are being cut, and when our K through 12 schools' transportation budget is cut, so that our schools, a lot of them are going 4 days a week now, I don't know how you can say that we do not have a revenue problem. I think that we don't have a tax code that works for regular families. Here's what I see. I see things like the timely filing discount, which if you haven't heard of this is where when you pay your sales tax at Walmart, if they pay it over to the state on time, they get to keep 2% of it and send it back to their corporate headquarters in Arkansas. I do not see how you can justify giving a tax break to Sam Walton's grandkids when our grandparents can't afford their prescription drugs. So yes, we need to reevaluate our tax code, and we need to make sure that it's working for our working families and not for special interests and not for big donors. They can afford it. Sam Walton's grandkids are not hurting. My neighbor down the street who got his letter that his Missouri RX benefits were being cut, he is hurting. People in Oak Grove who I talked to, whose in-home health care is being cut every day, they are hurting. And we need to reevaluate our tax code, absolutely.
Next question will go first to Ms. Shields. We have a number of questions about this. Essentially, the question is, should Missouri raise the minimum wage beyond its current $7.70? With periodic cost of living adjustments, or should it allow municipalities to raise the wage for their own cities above the state level, as St. Louis and Kansas City have attempted to do? Ms. Shields.
Yes. Let's start with a simple fact. You cannot support yourself, let alone a family, on $7.70 an hour. I have met people, I've spoken with people who are working full-time at low-wage jobs and can't afford to buy shoes for their children. They can't afford to pay rent and end up homeless. We are living in the richest country in the world, and it is immoral that there are people who work full-time and live in poverty. Now, one thing, there are not a lot of things that I agree with conservatives on, but one thing that I agree with them on is that a lot of the time, local governments know what is best for their areas. So I absolutely think that local municipalities should have the economic freedom to raise their minimum wage if that's what they want to do. I grew up in rural Missouri. I grew up in Kirksville, and the cost of living in Kirksville is not as high as it is in Kansas City. And so absolutely Kansas City should have the freedom to raise their wage if that's what they think needs to be done. And when this preemption was passed, St. Louis had already raised their minimum wage, and they took money out of the pockets of working families, and that is not right.
Representative Searpoint.
I voted to preempt the cities from doing that. In St. Louis County, we have got 92 jurisdiction, 92 different cities. I had a lot of businesses come and tell me that it's just not possible to run it when every jurisdiction might possibly do their own minimum wage. I had actually Democrats saying they couldn't vote for this, but they understood that it had to happen. There's some things that I'm a believer in local control. The government closest to the people, I think, does the best job. But there's sometimes we have to get involved, and that was one of those issues that's just bigger than that. We had to do something as a state. I always find it interesting when people who don't employ people tell people that do employ people how to run their business. I think that they do the best they can, and I think the minimum wage may be looked at some point, but it'll be on a statewide basis, not on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis.
Mr. Turk.
I support the small business owners, and they have told me that actually if the minimum wage was raised, they would get a raise. They struggle to make ends meet. They provide jobs for our working men and women, and so many of them have already said that if that minimum wage goes up, they'll go out of business. And it's not because of the minimum wage worker. It's because if they have a kid they bring in during the summer to learn how to work at that wage, and he's sweeping the floor, and he's getting $15 an hour, guess what the mechanic is going to say? The mechanic says, wait a second, I deserve a raise too. And the air conditioner technician says, hey, I deserve a raise too, because here's somebody who's an unskilled worker who's now making close to what I make. So there's a ripple effect that would just completely destroy small businesses, as Seattle is seen with their raise.
We have a series of questions here about education. And perhaps we'll start with the most general of those questions. How would you describe your position on the state of education right now in Missouri? We'll start with Mr. Turk.
It needs to be better. it just needs to be better. We have too many children that end up, our sons and daughters that end up wanting to go to college, and they have to take remedial courses at the college level, junior college level. They have to spend those hours and spend that money to do what our K through 12 system needs to be done. And the solution isn't always more money in government. That's the easy solution for those who are elected. The idea that we need to spend our money better, we need to ask questions of our school systems, we need to talk to the parents and say, are you getting what you need out of your school system? There's also a whole movement that's gone on where parents have left our public schools and they're either homeschooling or they're going to private secular or private religious schools. So we do have an issue with our public schools in Missouri. We have to find out what the basic problems are and what parents want for their children through our schools.
Ms. Shields.
So I'm a product of Missouri public schools. I'm a product of Missouri public universities, so is my husband. And I believe that they are the core of our communities. People here in Lee's Summit love their public schools, and I think that we need to support them. That's why I oppose the expansion of charter schools. That's why I oppose vouchers for private schools, because we need to support our public schools. They are the gateway to opportunity for all of our kids. And I think when you hear from my Republican opponents that our schools are failing, I think it's because they want to privatize our public schools. They want to expand charters. They want to expand private schools because they don't believe in public education. I am really proud to be endorsed by the Missouri NEA, by the Teachers Association, and I will be the strongest advocate for public schools in this race, I can guarantee it.
Representative Searpoy.
Thank you. I'm a big believer in reform. I've worked on some bills in Jeff City. First of all, let me clarify, a charter school is a public school. It is just outside of the normal public system. In Kansas City, Missouri, about 45% of the kids now go to charter schools. I find it appalling when somebody who says they are trying to help low-income people want to take the only chance some of those kids have to do a better job in this world. These kids, they're sizing jails off of third-grade reading levels. It is ridiculous. These kids, the only chance they have is a good education, and empowering those parents to take them to a building that they can do that is the least we can do for them. I think our schools in Lee Summit and Blue Springs are wonderful. The people out here like their schools. They're very happy with them. My whole job since I've been down there, the biggest area I focused on is education, trying to get people, families in bad buildings. In Kansas City, there's some wonderful schools in the Kansas City School District, but there's some schools down there that have failed for 30 years. And nobody talks about closing those failing traditional schools. They talk about closing that one charter school that's not doing that good, whose parents choose to put their kids there because they feel safe. Thank you.
Let me continue these questions about education. A couple of you mentioned charter schools. Want to hear more about whether you would actually favor expanding the use of charter schools, but not just charter schools. Would you support the use of vouchers for private schools, parochial schools? And if so, in any of those cases, how would you hold those schools that operate outside the oversight of a public school board, for example, how would you hold them accountable? First, that question goes first to you, Representative Searpoy.
I support expansion of charter. The bill we had last year, a lot of people tried to say we were trying to bring charter schools in Lee Summit and Blue Springs. That's just not true. You need 500 or 600 families that are unhappy with their school system to open a charter school. It's not an easy process. I don't think they have that many families out here that unhappy. And if they do, they should look into it. My job, what I was trying to do was in Kansas City and St. Louis, too, and St. Louis has got several cities that have failing school districts. Trying to give them, some of those school districts are not big enough to actually have a charter school because it takes a certain critical mass. And so we're trying to make it so they could cross boundaries to go to a charter school. St. Louis City has got a lot of charter schools. We try to let Riverview Gardens and some of those other areas that have unsuccessful districts, kids cross over and go to those charter schools. That's one of the things we did. We also found that some of the districts around the state, I always thought all the country schools, all the rural districts were doing really well. They're not. But the reality is, the distance they travel, the buildings being available are not there, and so charter schools just aren't possible in many of those areas. So what we've tried to do is sculpt these bills so that people, okay, sorry.
Thank you. Ms. Shields.
Well, I guess I'm repeating myself, but no, I do not support vouchers. I do not support the expansion of charter schools. Like I said before, I grew up in rural Missouri, and when you live in a rural community, there are no private schools. There are no charter schools. There's just the school. And if we pursue these policies that are going to suck funds out of the traditional public school system, those kids are going to get hurt. They're not going to have funding for the schools that they really rely on. And when you talk about crossing boundaries, when you live in Kirksville, which is the metropolitan center of Northeast Missouri with its 17,000 people, there's nowhere to travel to. It was an hour and a half to the closest mall. It's not an option for those kids. What we need to do is invest in our public schools. What we need to do is invest in giving those kids the same opportunities that kids all across the state get. And I received an excellent education from my rural school. And I want to make sure that every other kid has the same opportunities. And when we talk about taking these money, your money, mind you, your tax dollars, your scarce tax dollars out of our public schools, that really scares me.
Mr. Turk.
I think we need to expand what we think of as our educational system. Our educational system is for all our parents and all our kids, whatever choice that they make. When somebody chooses to homeschool their child, that child is not in the public school system using up resources. When somebody chooses to go to a private Christian school, they are not in the public schools, what we consider the public school system, using up those resources. I favor that. I favor parents who have the best interests of their child. It's up to them where they think the best place is to educate them. They may decide to sacrifice income from one parent to homeschool that child. That's a huge sacrifice, and they're still paying all the taxes. If they choose to spend on the private tuition at a private school, whether religious or secular, they're making a sacrifice as a family, so they have a real commitment to the education of their child. Yeah, we need to improve all levels of education. But let's remember, parents have their child's best interest in there. And if that child is not in a what's called a public school, they're not using up the resources, so we're not taking money away from them.
Thank you. A couple of questions about marijuana. Should Missouri legalize marijuana for medical use, for recreational use, or should it remain illegal? Begin with you, Ms. Shields.
So I did sign the petition for medical marijuana. I think that the voters should be able to make that decision for themselves. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that are suffering that might be helped. I've spoken, I actually have a close friend whose granddaughter has a very severe congenital birth defect, and they hope that using CBD oil, I'm sorry if I don't know the right terms, but will help her. And if it would help children who suffer, it would help cancer patients who suffer, I think that they should have that opportunity. And I hope that the voters will have the chance to make that decision, because the last thing I want to see is people suffering unnecessarily.
Mr. Turk.
The oil is really a different issue than medical marijuana that people would actually smoke and get intoxicated with. There are other ways to deliver this. This is something that I've been in federal meetings about. There are other ways to deliver the components of marijuana that helps those folks that need that help, and I fully support that, and I support more research on the compounds that come out of marijuana. I don't favor legalizing it recreationally. My brother lives in Denver, Colorado, has been there for decades. And the story from Colorado is not the rosy one that advocates of legalizing marijuana would tell you. I think the voters of Missouri can make that choice, but they need to know the truth about the downsides. I wouldn't vote for it. I know what's happening in Colorado at the ground level view, and it's not good. So people need to know the truth, and then they can make the choice.
Representative Searpoy.
Thank you. I actually voted for a bill in Jeff City for medical marijuana and its components, but it was very tightly drawn. I don't know what this petition process is, how tightly it's drawn. This was for seven specific diagnoses, including autism, end-of-life cancer diagnosis, and some others. And I thought it was drawn well. It passed the House with big numbers, but it died in the Senate. I think it's. I know some folks that it made a profound impact on their life. I'm totally against legalizing marijuana for recreational use. I think Colorado is showing us that is not a good idea. But for very tightly drawn diagnosis, I think it's it shows great benefit to a lot of people, and I think it's worth pursuing.
Thank you. This next question will go first to Mr. Turk. I've had a number of questions about firearms and gun safety. And they come from different perspectives, these questions on these cards. Some of them ask if you will, what you will do to protect the Second Amendment. Others will ask what you will do when the Second Amendment was written long ago and weapons were very different. What is your position with regard to gun control and gun safety in Missouri? Mr. Turk.
I believe in the individual right to keep and bear arms, whether for personal protection, hunting, whatever legal use that people want it for. We've had a tight control at the federal level on automatic firearms. We need to look at the bump stock and getting rid of those. That's what the Vegas shooter used. I'm a Marine veteran. Firearms for personal protection are very important. It's even more of a woman's issue that with the strength of men, even an unarmed man can attack a woman, and she doesn't have the ability to even those odds unless she's carrying a firearm. So I have two daughters, and it's very important to me that they're able to have the protection that they choose to have. So this is an issue that goes beyond the tragedies that we are faced with from time to time. It is about people being able to protect themselves in their homes, in the streets if necessary, and it's happened over and over again. And the increase in firearms has been 10 million firearms over the last few years added, and the murder rate has dropped precipitously.
Representative Searpoy.
I also am a supporter of the Second Amendment. I've been endorsed by the NRA. Law-abiding citizens having firearms is not a problem. I remember a while back when concealed carry was all the rage, all the warnings about how it'd be the Wild Wild West, it's worked fine. My wife, frighteningly, has a concealed carry license. She feels much safer with it, as was said. A woman is in this modern world can be very vulnerable, and a firearm levels the playing field a great deal on that. Constitutional carry we have now, again, we're warned about how bad it was going to be. Law-abiding people having firearms is not a problem.
Ms. Shields?
So I've said it a couple of times tonight. I grew up in a rural community. Guns are part of the culture there. I've been out shooting with my dad before, with my father-in-law, who thought it'd be really funny to have me like try out his giant rifle. I learned the meaning of the word kickback. It's strong. And, you know, my father-in-law, he hunts. He tries to give us way more deer meat than we can ever possibly use. And I absolutely support the right of sportsmen to keep and bear arms. Sadly, I think one of the things that I'm going to have to really focus on, though, as a state senator, is mental health care. That most gun deaths are suicide deaths. And we really need to make sure that we're investing in our mental health system so that people who are struggling are able to get the care that they need so that we can prevent those deaths. Because it is a tragedy when we lose lives far too early to those types of deaths. So I want to see us really invest in our mental health system and make sure that we're taking care of Missourians all over the state.
Thank you. We've had a lot of questions about health care. I know I asked one earlier, and each of you weighed in on your feelings about Medicaid expansion for and against. We've had other questions, though, that ask more broadly. What would you do to improve health care and helping people pay for it in Missouri? And we begin with Representative Searpoy.
Sure. If I was king, we would, I think we need more market forces in healthcare. When I go on doors, talk to people, and this was true in 2010 when I first ran, the thing people complained about most was healthcare and education. The two things government most involved with is healthcare and education. I think the way they control costs by controlling reimbursement rates is completely out of whack. They should control costs by making them compete for services. The government should get out of the system. I think with Obamacare, for instance, I think it's exactly the wrong way. It's driving up the insurance pools so people are dropping out. They should, if I think subsidies probably should be offered. My wife has had breast cancer. She's got cardiac issues now. She would be uninsurable. That's where the subsidy should go, I think, to high-risk people so they have insurance pools that are affordable. And that way the general population would have much, much lower rates and people would be involved. And insurance companies should be able to compete across state lines for their customers. I think it works in everything else with competition. I think it will work in healthcare.
Ms. Shields.
So healthcare is a really important issue to me. I personally have a pre-existing condition, ulcerative colitis, and so when Republicans started talking about repealing the healthcare law and taking away those protections, it really worried me. But I'm actually one of the lucky ones. My condition is controlled pretty well with medication, and I get by okay. And if I didn't have my meds, life would be unpleasant, but I'd survive. That's not true for everyone. There are people in our community that if they lose these protections, I don't know what will happen to them. One of those people, my friend Deirdre, her daughter Izzy, I think of her every time I think about this healthcare debate. She has cystic fibrosis. When she was 2 years old, she was going to lose her insurance coverage because of lifetime caps. And I worry these Republican plans that try to take away protection for lifetime caps, try to take away pre-existing condition coverage, it's kids like Izzy that are going to get hurt. You know, her family did everything right. They had good employer-based coverage. They were trying their best to take care of her. But at 2 years old, she was going to lose her care. And I just don't think that that's acceptable.
Mr. Turk.
We need to have patient-centered health care. Our arguments continue to be about health insurance. We all know folks, including within our families, that have chronic conditions, and they need care. And they need health insurance that they can afford, and all of us need health insurance for, God forbid, when we need it. And I have always favored a system where you have big rating pools that used to work for the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and that was on the consumer protection side. And so having rating pools of large groups of people that can share the cost, that's what insurance is all about. Unfortunately, we have too many barriers by the government to prevent that. So we could have small business consortiums. We could have geographic areas. I'm open to suggestions on solutions to this, but that's what we need to do, just like large corporations are able to do without pre-existing conditions or turndowns. That's what the American people wanted. That's not what they got with Obamacare.
All right. Changing the subject a little bit, away from issues per se to your campaigns themselves. This question asks very simply, is your money coming from out of state? Let me complexify, is that a word? Complexify the question a little and ask, where is the money coming from to support your campaign? Save us the trouble of going to the Missouri Ethics Commission website and looking it up. How are you funding your campaign? Let's begin with you, Ms. Shields.
So we are a grassroots campaign. Like I said, I never thought I'd be a politician, so I don't have the networks of big donors that these guys do. Our campaign is fueled by small dollar donations, over 1,100 as of today, which just blew me away. People have been incredibly generous, and I'm really grateful for that. I find it disturbing when people like my Republican opponent take a $50,000 check from David Humphreys. I don't know how you can say that you're not bought and paid for when you take that size of a donation. And I know that he's going to expect something in return for that. So that's why I'm proud that all of my donations come from friends and family and people that I care about that I know aren't going to come asking me for a specific piece of legislation that's going to help their bottom line. Because at the end of the day, I want to be able to look out for all of you guys. I want to be able to represent the people in my community and not just a couple of mega donors.
Mr. Turk.
Well, Ms. Shields has obviously never looked at our campaign reports. We don't have any mega donors. My biggest donor has always been my mother. And all of our money comes from individuals. Never accepted a dime from any PAC or any special interest, because I feel like to be able to represent you, then you're the ones that will get me there. You're the ones that I want to listen to. Unfortunately, when our establishment politicians take special interest check after special interest check, our mega donations like what Mike did with Humphreys, our voices get smaller and smaller in their ears, and that's one of the fundamental problems that we have in the halls of government, whether it's Jeff City or in Congress. We need to be heard as people and not special interests taking up all their time, because it's just easy for special interests to write the big check. And so we start losing our voice and we start losing our representation. So I've never taken a dime of PAC or special interest money, and I think my mom will always be my biggest donor.
Representative Searpoint.
Thank you. I've received PAC and corporate checks in Jeff City. But the thing is, a lot of the interests come down there, and I think that these interests, whether it's Express Scripts or Anheuser-Busch or Cerner Corporation, they've got an enormous amount of capital invested in Missouri, creating Missouri jobs. I think they have a right to be there and be heard. They're watching, because every time we do something, we need to make sure that it doesn't have unintended consequences. And they are there for that purpose, to make sure that what we're doing is written and impacts the way it's intended. So whether you're somebody who cares about life, somebody who cares about guns, or somebody who cares about some of the other things that we deal with in Jeff City, I think they have a right to be there and to be heard. I've always thought there's too much money in politics. If you want to get money out of politics, get politics out of everybody's business. We are in way too many things. I would love to see us unregulate some areas and leave people alone. Businesses don't go down there because they want to. They go down there to protect themselves, and that's why many of them are there. Thank you.
Thanks. I had a number of questions about paying for in-home nursing care, paying for services for disabled Missourians, and paying for services for senior Missourians. Earlier this year, up to 8,000 disabled Missourians lost funding for in-home and nursing care when the General Assembly did not include that in the state budget. There was a bipartisan fix, a sweeping of state funds that would have paid for that, but some say, the supporters said, that would have paid for that, but the governor vetoed that. Republican leaders said last week that they now have a plan for funding that care. Should Governor Greitens call a special session, his third this year, to consider this budgetary fix? And how else would you help pay for care for disabled and senior Missourians? For that question goes first to Representative Searpoint.
No, it is an issue. In-home care for seniors is something that the governor, they have an acuity test. Now, there's a prediction that 8,000 people would be impacted. So far, it's been under 100, because there's some amount of being subjective as far as the tests they give for the acuity testing. And so the impacts have been much, much less than they anticipated. The other side of that, though, of course, is those, since these folks are still getting all the services, the budget line is going to grow, and so probably the governor will have to withhold something else somewhere else in the budget to balance it at the end of the year. So that's the downside of that. But it is something I know the Republicans and Democrats in Jeff City are talking, mostly the budget people. They're trying to work out a compromise. They need about $35 million to cover this up, and I think they're close to it. If they reach agreement, and I think the House will support whatever the Senate could come up with. If they reach agreement, I'd like to see the governor call for a special session. It would be something. People talk about how much money it costs for a special session. On the utility bill, also on the abortion bill, we're there one day as an entire body for $20,000. The rest of the time was just committees, which is much less expensive.
Mr. Turk.
This is one of the areas where a high-risk pool run by the state can be effective. This has personally affected both my wife's family and my family. Her husband, or her father, has been disabled for a number of years, and they did have good health insurance through Eastern Airlines before it became defunct. But that's a burden that her family bears today. My father, rest in peace, passed away about 6 years ago. He was in a wheelchair for the last 24 years of his life due to a massive hemorrhage. But as I always said, Dad told the same dumb jokes on the day that he passed away as when I was a kid. So we still had Dad. And it is a burden on families. And where appropriate, we should look and talk to our constituents and see what kind of support that they want to give to those families.
Ms. Shields.
Well, I want to start off by saying that one senior losing access to in-home care services is too many. When I talk to people at the doors who rely on these services, and they tell me that they are already receiving less care than they need, when I talk to a senior in Oak Grove and he tells me, I need 6.5 hours of care a day. He's in a wheelchair, he needs help getting out of bed, he needs help getting into bed, he needs help with a lot of daily function. And already they've cut him down to 4 hours a day. That's a problem. He's already having to pay out of pocket to make up the difference. And he's worried that he's going to have to put a reverse mortgage on his home, which could eventually lead to him losing his home. So that's a problem. Now, if we could find a solution, that would be great. I'm kind of doubtful with the lack of leadership that they've shown so far. They had a solution for this. And they just blew it, basically. They could have overridden the governor's veto, and they didn't. So do I have faith that if they call a special session that they'll be able to solve this? Not really. Also, I want to say that you can say that $20,000 a day isn't a whole lot, and it probably doesn't seem like a lot when you're getting $50,000 checks from David Humphreys, but it's a lot to regular people.
Next question is about environmental regulation. What is your position on the balance between environmental regulation and being pro-business? Are you concerned about the risks of overregulation, and are you concerned about irreversible harm to the planet? This person also asks if you believe climate change is real. Begin with Ms. Shields.
Yes, climate change is real. Is that still a controversy? So, of course, we need to balance the needs of our businesses and the needs of our environment. But I think that there are a lot of common sense things that we can do right here in Missouri. One of them is to allow people to have solar panels on their roof. This is not just good for the environment, but it's good for people who are able to cut down on their electric bills. And I don't know why anyone would oppose people being able to have those solar panels, sell back the extra energy they make to the electric companies. Basically, it's a win-win. It's good for our environment. It's good for regular people who want to cut down on their electric bills, which are way higher than most of us want to pay. So I think that we need to look for some common sense solutions that really put our Missouri families first and put their checkbooks, their bottom lines first.
Representative Searpoint.
I think there's a lot of questions about global warming, and I think that with the Greitens administration, I think the DNR is going to be much easier to deal with. I think they'll still look at serious stuff, but it won't be the harassment that they had before. And I think the same thing is true in Washington with the EPA. The Waters of the USA was a disaster for our farmers, and it's gone now, which is a good thing. It is ridiculous how many burdens they put on our business people. Over things that I've been amazed when I've been contacted by constituents, some of the problems they've had on disposal and some other things. It's just silly, and it's impossible to deal with if you don't have a lawyer or somebody else to deal with them. The bureaucracy needs to be more responsive to these folks and more inclined on what's important and what's not. It seems that bureaucracy, their job is to regulate, and by God, they're going to regulate. And I'm glad we've got a governor now, and I think a president that's more inclined with doing things that actually matter.
Mr. Turk.
There is definite climate change. The controversy comes whether it's man-made or not. And in this country, I grew up during the 60s when the environmental movement took off, and it did a lot of good, and then it got to the point of diminishing returns. We take good care of our environment because we love this earth, and we want our families to be healthy, and we want clean air, and we want clean water, and we've got that. What's happened is our regulatory agencies have gone beyond that and to the point of ridiculousness, in fact, to the point that it hurts the environment. Used to be the Independence Power Company used to burn tires, and they had a special furnace where they burned them, and it came out clean. And then now with what the Obama administration did, they decided not to do it anymore, and now those millions of tires that we used to see catch on fire and put all that smoke, they're starting to come back again because government went too far. So we need common sense regulation. We need to take care of this earth because this is where we all live. I'm a scientist. I started as a physics major, went into mechanical engineering. The evidence is not what people think it is when it comes to global warming and man-made global warming.
Another question, and I'm going to just admit this one's from me. I've been following all of you on Facebook and Twitter. I know you've been meeting a lot of voters, going to a lot of doors, making a lot of phone calls. I wonder if you could tell me about a conversation you've had with someone who disagreed with you about something important and how their convictions made you in some way reevaluate your own. Mr. Turk.
As people have discovered on the campaign trail, you can imagine as a conservative Republican running in a very Democrat district that most of the conversations have started out to be a little dicey. But once we get past that first point, what people realize is opposition is okay with me. I have my convictions, but I learn from conversations with those of opposing viewpoints. I remember one business owner who really believed that raising the earnings tax would be good for her business. Or actually, it wasn't good for her business. It was the fact that we needed that, and this is in Kansas City, and tried to explain to her that it drives businesses away and it would actually hurt her small business, that if they kept that up, you know, the earnings tax and other policies that we've had in this area built Johnson County. And so I listened to what she had to say. She listened to what I had to say. And we parted friends, just disagreed.
Ms. Shields.
So I've been talking to a lot of folks on the doors, and of course not all of them agree with me. One conversation that really sticks out in my mind, I knocked the door of a gentleman who is a strong Republican, and I spoke with him and his fiancée for quite a while. He was a veteran and had served in the Marines, as my grandfather had, and we got to chat a little bit about that. But as we talked, I found out his fiancée's daughter suffered from some severe mental health problems, and she was really concerned that she wasn't able to get the services that she wanted. And even though it seemed like we would never probably come to the same page on a lot of issues, you know, I left telling them, you know, vote for me or don't vote for me. No matter what, I'm gonna fight for your daughter. I'm gonna fight to make sure that she's able to get the care that she needs. And so we may not see eye to eye on everything, but I think that we can all agree that people in this state are suffering and that we need to work harder to serve regular families. So that was a really valuable conversation to me.
Representative Searpoint.
Thank you. I went to a senior living facility out in Oak Grove and was talking to, it's mostly women, and just talking about the circuit breaker, a low-income property tax credit program. And it was just good because hearing their concerns about it, we're talking about maybe using some of those funds for the senior in-home care. It was just kind of a wake-up call for me to listen to them, because I don't have people come in my office like that, because those folks are kind of impaired; they can't get around much. And it made me realize that what we do matters. And I knew that anyway, but it really did it in a way that you don't see every day.
This question is about jobs and employment. It's going to go first to you, Representative Searpoint. Providing employment opportunities is of great importance to the working class. What are you considering proposing to increase employment in Missouri?
Well, a lot of the bills that we're dealing with, that we've dealt with, last year we made some progress with the governor coming in. Governor Nixon had stopped many of them over the years. But with Governor Greitens coming in, labor reform, I know a lot of people disagree with it, but I think that is how we grow the economy. That's one of the tools that we can use to a new startup doesn't care where they are. You know, they go to usually where they live. Somebody has an idea, they start a business. But a large company coming here, it matters a lot. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do is with labor reform. This year, I think we're going to look at prevailing wage. I think there's a way through that makes everybody, if not happy, at least everybody gets out alive. I think some of these rural counties need relief from prevailing wage. And at the same time, Jackson, Cass, Platt, Clay, and Jefferson and St. Louis City and County have a prevailing wage there that is can be modified in the poor rural counties, so they don't have to pay Kansas City and St. Louis wages. So all those things, I think, make for a better business climate. And the entire package, once we get it passed, I think this won't happen overnight, but I think it will matter over a period of time to make Missouri more competitive.
Ms. Shields.
So I think this is an issue where you see a really clear contrast between me and my Republican opponents. They're going to talk about policies that are going to cut wages. That's when he's talking about reforming prevailing wage. That's what he's talking about, is cutting the amount that people are paid to work on these jobs. What I think we need to do to create a more business-friendly environment is to really invest in our infrastructure, invest in high-speed broadband for our rural communities. Growing up in a town like Kirksville, I can tell you, I remember the sound of a dial-up modem, and that is not a business-friendly atmosphere. So we need to invest in our roads and our bridges and our high-speed internet. We need to invest in our public universities and make sure that we have the educated workers that are going to be tomorrow's entrepreneurs, that are going to be tomorrow's employees. And so rather than focusing on taking away the rights of working people to organize, and rather than focusing on cutting wages of hardworking people, I think that we need to focus on investing in our state and making sure that we're prepared to meet those jobs of tomorrow.
Mr. Turk.
Government doesn't create jobs, but it can create the environment where businesses can flourish. And where any economy really starts growing is with the small business sector. And as I talked to, like I said, over 1,600 business owners in the last couple of years, they didn't talk about the legislation so much. They were pretty satisfied with what the legislature has been doing. What they started talking about is where I would choose to intervene was with the regulators. DNR, DOR, just horror stories that they told time and again that they need those folks off their back. And I'm willing to walk into those offices and have a reasonable conversation, hopefully, to let regulators know how much they are affecting these small businesses that create the jobs. And then this gets back to education. There are a lot of good-paying jobs out there in the technical fields, whether it's, like I said, air conditioning repair, auto technician, skilled manufacturing. And they're saying, what are our school systems doing? We cannot find the young workers anymore for those jobs. And they're $20 an hour jobs to start.
Question about how you will carry out this office, should you be elected to it, goes first to Ms. Shields. How will you ensure that constituents have access to you?
Well, at the end of this, when you can pick up my literature, my personal email, my personal cell phone are on there. I want to be as accessible to everyone as I can. As when I was an organizer, when I was leading people on visits to my members of Congress, to my state representatives, it was incredibly important to me to see regular people engaging with their government. So I will try to be as available as possible to everyone in my community, regardless of their political affiliation. I need to hear from you to know what you need. When I've been out on doors, I ask people, you know, what are you concerned about in our state? What do you need? Because I know what my priorities are, making sure that hardworking people can support their families and have access to good education and affordable health care. But I need to know what your concerns are. And so I appreciate the people who have shared those with me so far, and I really hope that I'll hear from a lot more people as your state senator, because our democracy only works when people are fully engaged with it.
Representative Searpoy.
Thank you. I'll do it as I have in my office. My office is always open. I have a lot of people come in, a lot of constituents come in. I always make sure I'm there for them. And I go to a lot of meetings around the district. The Senate district is much bigger, but I'll continue that. I'm retired. This is what I do. So, in fact, my first year in 10 when I got elected, I started serving in 11. I took a leave of absence from Southwestern Bell. In June, I went back to work, and by September, I was out of vacation by going to meetings. So that's why I went ahead and retired in the fall. This job is a part-time legislative job, but as a rep, it is time-consuming to satisfy all the constituent services that people have. And as a state senator, it'll be even more so, and I plan on just continuing the same policy.
Mr. Turner.
As people know from my campaigns that I get out and about, been to hundreds of festivals, parades. Somebody said that today that they remember shaking my hand at the Independence or at the Sugar Creek 4th of July parade. It is so important to be out among people. And one of the things that I've thought about that if I was blessed to go to Congress, I'm running for state Senate now, but how do I keep in touch with people? How do we stay out of that bubble? There is a bubble around Jeff City, and I'm just astounded at the people that go there, and you just don't know them anymore. One of the things that I will do is I will randomly, for an hour or two, whenever possible, hopefully on a daily basis. I'll answer my own office phone, just like I do from time to time on the campaign, and people are like amazed, hey, you're the candidate. I wasn't expecting to talk to you. Well, I want to talk to you, so I'm going to pick up the phone. We'll have town halls that actually will be promoted widely and encourage people and do calls to get people to come out, because I know a discouragement for representatives in holding those is not many people show up. But let's encourage people to be involved with the process.
This question will go first to Mr. Turk. In August, the NAACP issued its first ever state travel advisory warning travelers to show extreme caution when visiting Missouri. We're familiar with incidents of racial tension in recent years in various parts of the state. Does our state have a problem with racism? And as a state senator, what, if anything, would you do about that? Mr. Turk.
Ordinary people are so affected by the divisiveness of our political leadership, who look to separate us by race and by belief, whether religious or otherwise, and I'm disgusted by it. The hatred that comes out of our political leaders, they talk of one side of their mouth that they want to be conciliatory, and the next moment they're criticizing those who oppose them. I have been a Republican that has run in the African-American neighborhoods of Kansas City, and it is just repugnant to me on how our political leadership keeps the regular citizens apart. We in America, we have biracial families, triracial families. That has moved forward while our political leadership has ignored that. We as people want to get along and get together. So they just need to shut up and let the rest of us work it out.
Ms. Shields.
So I've said before, I'm not much of a politician. And before I got involved in politics, what my real passion was for hosting foreign exchange students. My husband and I have hosted eight kids from six countries in 8 years. It's been kind of busy, full house all the time. And one of the reasons that we do this is because it's called citizen diplomacy. We believe that when people from other countries come here and meet people in our communities, that it changes hearts and it changes lives. I've experienced it myself. After hosting a son from Brazil, when I hear about tensions in Brazil, when I hear about, you know, riots and terrible things going on down there, it's not some distant place now. It's where Tomas lives, and wondering how my boy is doing. He's so skinny, and I worry about him all the time. But I think that building those personal relationships is incredibly important. And supporting these programs that allow for intercultural exchange and that allow for people to really get to know each other is something I want to support.
Representative Searpoint.
Thank you. I think in the areas of racial relations, we've made giant progress. You know, there's still ways to go, but we have made, from when I was a young person, we have made a lot of progress. But I go back to what I said earlier. The only way we fix Ferguson and some of these other places is to give these kids. It's not an overnight fix. It doesn't make people happy that it's going to be done next year. But if we give these kids, I've been working on education now for 7 years. That second grader is now in ninth grade. It's probably too late to help that child. But there's another second grader going there now. And we've got to figure out a way to give these kids the ability to get into a good school. That's the only long-term way to fix this situation. And if I'm elected, I will continue that work.
So the three of you have answered now 21 questions, questions on healthcare and on business, on abortion and on transportation, on education and on minimum wage. All that's left is your closing statements. You'll have 2 minutes each to make those statements, and after that we'll just have a few final words of thanks. You give your closing statements in the same order that you spoke at the beginning, and so we begin with Representative Searpoint.
Thank you. I want to thank you again for coming out tonight, folks. I know you've got better things to do. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. You'll find that, as I said in Jeff City, I don't pretend to know all the answers. I don't pretend that we pass perfect bills. I've not voted on one perfect bill. Half of what we do down there, or two-thirds, is going back and tweaking something we did either last year or 20 years ago. So if anybody tells you what we're working on is perfection, they're wrong, and they're not being honest. We are just 163 people in the House trying to do what we think is the best thing for Missouri. I have a lot of constituents come up to me and just say, Mike, just do the right thing. There's just some disagreement on what the right thing is, and that disagreement will continue. I've been really proud to serve down there and work with the different groups. I've actually reached across the aisle. There's a lot of issues. It doesn't sound like we get along down there, but there's many issues that there is a broad agreement on, and I'm happy to work with folks doing that. I think we're on the right track to make this state grow. As I said earlier, the only thing that really fixes many, many of our problems is a good job. And the only way we get good jobs is to have healthy businesses in this state. And I think we're on a track to do that now with this governor. And I think in the next 3 years, we're going to make giant strides in making Missouri a better place to work, live, and raise your family. Thank you.
All right. I guess we're allowing applause after closing statements. Ms. Shields.
Thank you. I do want to thank the League of Women Voters and KCUR again for hosting this forum. I think it's been a wonderful opportunity for all of you to hear a set of really contrasting visions for the future of our state. Now, like I said at the beginning, I'm Hillary Shields. I live here in Lee's Summit, grew up in rural Missouri. My husband Mitch and I love this community. And I believe in our democracy, but I believe that regular people really need to be heard. And right now, in Jefferson City, big donors, dark money, that's who's getting heard. And we need a government that works for regular people, a government that works for you. Whether you're a parent who's worried about being able to afford to send your kids to college, or a senior who's trying to figure out how to afford your meds, or a working person that just wants a say in how your life is run, I want to be a voice for you. Now, if you feel like the state of Missouri, our government, Jefferson City, is serving you just fine right now, if you feel like they are listening to your voice and that they're doing the right thing and that we are on the right track, then vote for one of these guys, because they're going to be more of the same. But if you want a fresh vision, someone that's not a career politician that hasn't been running for office for a dozen years, and someone who's really going to be a fresh voice in Jefferson City, I hope that I can earn your vote. Our working families deserve a lot better than they've been getting, and we need to prioritize their needs now. So thank you all again so much for being here. I'm so happy to see so many people engaged with democracy. This is really heartening, and I appreciate being a part of this forum.
And Mr. Turk.
My name is Jacob Turk. You know me, you know who I am. We also know that when any of us gets under pressure, who we truly are comes out. These campaigns reflect who their candidates truly are. Our campaign strives to walk in integrity every day and to earn your vote through truth. You cannot expect a candidate who trucks in innuendo and falsehoods to suddenly become an honest representative when they go to Jeff City. Because our campaign was the strongest in the beginning, we have come under tremendous and vicious attack. My priorities are to listen to you on these issues, to serve you, not a party and not a special interest. As a Marine veteran, I will represent as an advocate for our active duty military, our veterans, and their loved ones. They will have a go-to person in Jeff City. Our small business owners are close to my heart, and they create the jobs, and I know so many of them, and I'll be a voice for them, particularly in dealing with the bureaucracy. This is my home. You know me. I am one of us. And I have spent the time to get to know you. And yes, I've run for office unsuccessfully. And no, I'm not more of the same. Candidates should learn who they're running against. We are neighbors. And in these closing days, as both these campaigns release the next innuendo or the next falsehood about me, I just ask you to consider the source and ignore it. You have come to know Jacob Turk, and you know you can trust me to walk with an integrity and to represent you well. My name is Jacob Turk. I ask for and would be honored to receive your vote, and it would be my privilege to represent you in Jefferson City. May God bless you and yours. Thank you for being here tonight.
Friends, these are the questions that we had time to ask. These are the questions we did not have time to ask. But what that says to me is that you are a very highly engaged, deeply committed group of voters, people who are interested in this campaign, and I am grateful for you all taking the time to be here tonight. Before we let our three candidates go, we have a gift for them. Every guest on Statehouse Blend Missouri podcast gets a Statehouse Blend Missouri mug. So, our thanks to the League of Women Voters of Kansas City, Jackson, Clay, and Platte counties for co-sponsoring this candidate forum, especially the coordinator of the forum, Caroline Arnold. You can find out more about the League at their website, lwvkc.org. Don't forget to share this podcast with others and subscribe so you get all the latest on Missouri government and politics news. You can also get a lot of that by following me on Twitter. I'm at PTSBrian. We had engineering help today from Chris Young. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.